We know three things about the disciple whose name was Simon Peter. He made his living harvesting fish. He was so impulsive that he often spoke before he thought. And he had a bargaining streak in him, so that he got mixed up sometimes about the difference between love and arithmetic. How many times, he asked Christ one day, do you think I ought to forgive people? He waited for a moment and then exploded his little firecracker of generosity. How about seven times? This was the Jewish number for perfection, so Peter got ready for applause. He had established the outer limit. Surely the math of forgiveness went no higher than that. His hand was already over his shoulder to pat his own back. But Jesus had a surprise of his own. Peter, you are to forgive until 70 times 7, if you can keep count that long. In other words, you don't forgive by the numbers. I think Peter had the good sense to be embarrassed, but a single setback seldom changes the overall shape of a man's mind. So on another occasion, Peter wanted to know how much reward there would be for people like himself who had given up everything to follow. His mind sought a balance. So much service and sacrifice should equal so much reward. It's an excellent principle in the world of business, but in the kingdom of heaven, it shows a bargaining streak that misses the whole point of that kingdom. So Jesus took time to tell Peter and his friends a story. A very odd story about a vineyard keeper who seems less a businessman than he does an eccentric humorist. The disciples didn't always understand the parables, and this one was especially tough. It has something to offend just about everybody. In fact, as I once heard a great pulpit minister say, if this one doesn't rub you the wrong way, you must not have all your fur. This is the story. The owner of a vineyard finds his grapes ready one morning, so he goes out early to hire workers at 6, promising a day's wages. When he needs more, he goes out again at 9, at noon, at 3, and finally even at 5, saying, I'll pay you what's right. They were in no position to bargain, so they trusted him, even though they hardly got to the slopes before the bell rang and it was time to quit. The owner now does something crazy. He tells his bookkeeper to pay first the men who came last. If he had paid the morning workers their wages and sent them on their way, they would already have been down at the local pub lifting a cold Coors by the time the latecomers were paid. But they have to wait. And they see the same coin dropped into the 5 o'clock hands that they had been promised early that morning. Amazed, they watch. But they do not break into a chorus of amazing grace, because their minds are on merit and justice. And if these guys get a full day's pay, then obviously they are going to get more. But they don't. And so they do what my instincts would tell me to do in that circumstance. They blow their tops. Those people spent 1 hour on the job and got as much as we did. When we've worked in the heat all day long, it's not fair. We don't like it. And then this bizarre capitalist, whom Jesus has created, says, "Gentlemen, you're not cheated. You bargained with me for a day's pay, and you have it. Why be jealous because I'm generous to men who stood all day waiting for work and worrying because no man had hired them?" In a real life situation, which this story only pretends to be, I suppose those men would have said, "Well, certainly you have a right to do what you want with your money. It's just the principle of the thing." I discovered a long time ago by listening to myself and my friends that principle has an odd way of popping up only when it serves us. Somebody gets promoted who came in after we did, and all of a sudden we are red-hot defenders of seniority. If we get promoted the next year over someone who is senior to us, the principal goes into a deep coma. So in our weird story, the 11th hour workers have nothing to say about principles of economics. They are simply grateful for unexpected generosity. It's the mourning crowd that's unhappy, not because they were cheated or mistreated, but only because a few are overtreated. In the strange position of being offended by goodness. Don't kid yourself that something like this would work in the world of business, which has its own fair and wise laws that have been won from long experience. But then Jesus knew that as well as we do, and he was not saying in this cockeyed story that the kingdom of economics is like this or ought to be like this. He says the kingdom of heaven is like this. There's a kind of madness in that kingdom, and it works only among those who have come into it gladly and have subscribed to the principle of grace by which one gets more than one deserves. You wonder what was going on that made Jesus think he had to make up a story like this. Some people think it was told to address the problem of Gentile converts to Christianity. At first, there were only Jewish converts, and then the church opened its doors to Gentiles, and there was some fierce resentment. What's the world coming to? Letting these Johnny-come-lately Gentiles in at the 11th hour when we've suffered for generations as the people of God. Don't you believe that if someone had said, "Aren't you glad for them to have what we've had?" the grumblers would have ducked their heads and mumbled something into their beards that sounded like, "Oh, well, yes, sure, I guess so. It's just the principle of the thing." It reminds me of those occasional church people who get so eager for church growth, form publicity committees, send out brochures, enlarge the parking lot, and then lo and behold, it works. And they discover they've planned out everything except what to do when new people actually join. And there are new names and faces to match, a loving obligation to know them and make them feel at home, and maybe even, God forbid, one or two who don't fit the script for the drama we're acting out. We talk a lot in church about looking up. But the truth is, we do a lot of looking from side to side. Who's sitting in the pew I thought was mine? How many new people can be put on a board before we dilute the ecclesiastical gene pool? Not here, of course, because we're still young and eager for new faces, he said. But it could happen to us by and by if we aren't careful. We get to thinking that we are the judges of how God's grace ought to be spread around. But this parable says we are not. The whole ministry of Jesus can actually be summed up by two questions. To the conventionally religious, you know, the people who were just positive of their standing, he said over and over, "Are you sure you're in?" And to the supposedly irreligious, social misfits, he said, "Are you sure you're out of the kingdom?" The first question is a surprising judgment. Are you sure you're in? The second is amazing grace. And in this parable of ours, it is the unbounded and incalculable grace of God that says at the end, "Why be upset when I am generous? Can't I do with my own what I wish? Do you begrudge my goodness?" I think I'd better stop and caution you that this isn't the only parable in the Bible. All you have to do is turn a page or two more in Matthew, and there's one about five foolish girls who run out of oil. And when the bridegroom comes and the banquet starts, they knock on the door at the 11th hour and it gets slammed in their faces. In other words, the Bible argues with itself. One parable is an irrational yes. The other is an irrational no. I plan to give that other parable its chance next week, because there's always another side to everything. But today belongs to those magical moments in life when we get more than we deserve. And we never mind that, except when it happens to someone else we're not particularly fond of. She married that money, you know. She never could have earned a nickel on her own. His new Mercedes convertible, I saw it, but he's not Mercedes material. He just got lucky. We have such a penchant for calculation, who's in, who's out, who's saved, cleared for takeoff, who isn't. It's really tough for us just letting God be God. You know, if I were running the world, I can hear friends saying silently already, "God forbid." But if I were running the world, I'd keep much better notes, use a much sharper pencil, I'd make sure there was proper correlation between what a person does and what happens to her. Not like this God of the Bible who sends his rain and his sun, spell it both ways, on the just and the unjust alike. If I were in charge, the PTL would never have gotten so big in the first place. And Jimmy Swaggart would be selling oranges in New Orleans. I've preached about Jonah, but I'm sure I'm more like Jonah than I'd care to know. You remember how Jonah went so reluctantly off to preach to Nineveh in the wicked land of Assyria? Reluctant, simply because he was scared to death that God might be merciful and let those pagans live. He sat down under a little bush and pouted. He took God to court, and God lost. Jonah charged him with unbounded mercy and found him guilty. That Jonah story is not about whether it's possible for a man to survive the suffocating darkness and deadly stomach acids of a great fish. It's about a prophet who can't stand the idea that God may even love bad people. When God peeked at him under his bush and said, "What's the matter, Jonah?" Jonah said, "I'll tell you what's the matter. It's you and that amazing grace of yours, treating people better than they deserve the minute they show any sign of being sorry, any sign of longing." Offended by somebody else's good luck. It really hurts sometimes to see how God's grace spills over some lives that don't deserve it as much as we do. You remember the girl who sat behind you in the fourth grade and used the dimples and got all the Valentine notes? You remember her. Remember when you got the sweater and your brother Bill got the bike? When your brother did so poorly in school, smoked pot, ran around for years and had what seemed to be a good time, and then finally came to himself and settled down, and your parents were ecstatic and had the big party, and how you went home thinking, "I've done the right thing all these years, and nobody ever gave me a party like that." That story is in the New Testament too. We want grace, the gift of more than we deserve, when we need it. There's something in us that wants to be treated special, and something in us that doesn't always like it when others get treated the same way. Here's a little parable about this parable. The circus comes to town. And a small boy stands outside watching the people go in. But he can't go in because he doesn't have the money. The ticket seller sees him and, being a kind man, says, "Why don't you come in?" The boy says, "I want to, but I don't have the money for a ticket." The man says, "I'll tell you what. Come back tomorrow after school and I'll give you a ticket and let you in free." All excited, the boy runs home, can hardly eat his supper. "He's going to give me a ticket. He's going to let me in free." He can hardly sleep, and the next day he doesn't pay any attention in school. He just keeps saying under his breath, "He's going to let me in free. The man is going to give me a ticket." When school's out, he rushes out to the circus, but the ticket seller doesn't notice him at first, because 10 or 12 other boys are standing off to one side with longing written all over their faces. He looks at them and says, "All right, We've got some extra room. Everybody in free. Here are your tickets. Our young friend stands back, not going in. Man asks, "What's the matter? I told you I'd let you in free." "I've changed my mind. I don't want to go." "Why?" He had the joy of knowing for 24 hours that he would get to see the circus, but it just wasn't fair to give to so many. If life were totally a matter of strict fairness, it would scarcely be tolerable. That's one of our best preachers talking. Who wants to receive back from others, our roommates, husbands or wives, parents or siblings? Who wants to receive back from them exactly what we gave them? Is not life made tolerable and sometimes joyous by the fact that those closest to us overlook our tart words, ignore what is said in times of fatigue and bad moods, set aside the deeds that hurt? Is not this what love and compassion are all about? Why then do we not see ourselves as the ones who have gotten more than we deserve? There are always sunrise workers in a church, the ones who get up early, work far beyond what anyone asks or pays for, and if they keep a calculator, they are going to be unhappy. Somebody who came in at the last moment, worked only at the tail end of the day, will inevitably be paid off in praise as if he had borne the heat and burden of the whole long day. My ways are not your ways, God reminds us in this parable. I will do with my own what I please, and if you don't like it, you can take my mercy into the cramped little court of your own heart and charge me with amazing grace, because over and over again, I'm guilty.